incredible chiddush is that not necessarily. Okay, not necessarily is it in the best interest of everyone involved to work to bring the child back, which, as we mentioned yesterday, shatters everything we've heard, everything that we live with today. Today, this is unheard of. This halacha on the very bottom of page Kuf Ayin Zayin, it's where the child has not left. The child is part of the community, and the question is: should we kick him out? Rav David, I took your sefer. Okay, I'm using it. You want to sit on my side? You
want to
go with me?
I want to grab. I know.
I took yours. Okay, so,
no, I'm in the person because I'm an S.
Okay, Rabbi Sai, please, Rabbi Sai. Over here, the question is, there's a child that is making a lot of trouble, and he has not left the community. The question is, should we push him out? Here's such a question. V'im yesh lo ladam banim v'yachad bal machlekes. Pen yachti echav. He may influence his brothers to do aveiros. So he says something that is shocking. Mutov sheyidche es harasha b'shtei yodayim. He's very precise in his language. We'll discuss in one moment this idea, which this term is a very frightening term. To push away the troublemaker with two hands, no exceptions. The al yoimar, don't make a mistake and say to yourself, haloi v'haloi amru chachamim tehei doiche b'smol u'mikarev b'yomin. A person should push with the weaker hand and bring close with the stronger hand. That's one interpretation. No, the other interpretation is, when a person is going away from you, so his back is towards you. When he's leaving you, so his back is towards you. So how do you turn him around? You take your left hand, and you push him. You push his back. You push his left side with your left hand, and you take your right hand and you pull. So what happens when you push with one hand and you pull with the other? You turn him around. If I push with the left hand and I pull with the right hand, what are you doing? You're turning it around. I push like this, turn around. Pushing one direction, pulling with the other, you turn the person around. It's an expression which means turn the person around. Bring him back. He should change directions. So the question over here is, if the Chazal said that a person should always turn the person around, so why here am I giving you advice to push with both hands, get rid of him? The answer is because he's a danger to society. The rule that a person should bring another person back is only when he's not harmful to other people. When he is a bad influence upon other people, then the rule does not apply. B'mokoyim shechov lachedim yoyse yavoy l'ra, it'll be even worse. He himself will become even more evil. Im lo yadichuv, you will not push him away. How do you know this? Right, David lefi shekeira v'sav shalom. David made this mistake. David went and he was makar when Avshalom was making trouble. Instead of pushing him out of the house, he was makar of him. That only gave Avshalom more power, more influence to convince the people of the household to rebel against David, that Avshalom should be the king and David should be killed. So David made a big mistake and did not push away Avshalom. David should kill him as Avshalom. Harei kamen nefashos nehargu, a result in a civil war, and many people died. And David here is to blame. David could have nipped it in the bud by banishing and expelling Avshalom from his home early and preventing all of this from happening. Now, obviously, we discussed this yesterday, that everything that it says, Sefer Chassidim, take with a grain of salt. Today, we go to the professionals, and the professionals who have been in this business for the last number of years, they tell us no situation is simple, and you have to know what you're doing. Times today are different. The nisyonos are different, and the balance, it's sometimes much more of a healthy balance to have a variety of different types of children, and don't be so concerned that the bad child will influence the good children, just the opposite. More often than not, it's the good children that have an influence over the children who are more problematic. In other words, do not generalize. Every situation is unique. Every situation needs guidance of people who have a head on their shoulders and know what they're doing. This is just an important yisoid, the moral conscience of he's our moral conscience of Yudah Chassid, that there has to be a proper balance. It is a time and place for every technique and situation. Yeah.
Yeah, if you look carefully at his words, in the very first words, the im yesh lo la'adam banim, he's not an only son.
See, exactly. Yeah, so there's a danger. In this particular instance, there's a danger.
No, I'm saying if he's an only son, then you...
Then there's no problem. There's no problem, exactly. There is no problem in that case, because then he's not...
No, I see just the opposite. If he's the only son, then you're not merachik him.
Exactly, right.
That's
right. If he's the only son, there's no need to be merachik because he's not going to cause any harm. Who is he going to influence?
Right. Well, they can influence his sisters.
Oh, no, that's what it means, bonim. Bonim means children. Children. Obviously, you're correct. Every situation is different. Times are different today. The situations are different. Different types of children, different nisyonos. V'chulu. You cannot generalize, and we'll leave it at that.
I would like to add one thing. For several years, I was in the Bronx. I was in public school. All goyim, all completely goyim, everything. I mean, very... And we were once discussing this, how to handle children, and I told them the Chazal, that you should push away with the left and bring close with the right. They were enthralled with that. They couldn't believe it. They said they love that.
It's a beautiful expression.
Yes.
It's a very powerful expression.
I said you should push away.
The
you
left.
Push away, but with the left.
The similar interpretation is you're the koyach of bringing close should be stronger than the koyach of pushing away. The left is the weaker hand.
Yes.
The right is the stronger hand. Yes. Your pull should be stronger than the musar. You have to give musar. Musar is you push away with the left. But it should the kirvus, the closeness, the love that you show to come close always has to be greater than the musar. For every word of musar, there has to be two words of encouragement.
Did not we learn that this was a mistake they made with Yeshua?
Oh, excellent. So in the commentators, you have the full version, right? So in the full version of the Sefer Chassidim on the side and the Mefarshim, they bring down Yeshua ben Prachya. Right, Gemara, right, exactly. Yeshua ben Prachya. He was blamed. Yeshua ben Prachya is blamed as being the source of Christianity. Christianity started with Yeshu HaNotri the First. Yeshu HaNotri the First, how did it come about? He was a Talmud of Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachya, and they went on a trip. They went to Alexandria Shel Mitzrayim.
They ran away from
Horus. They ran away from Horus. Was wiping all the Talmidei Chachamim. So they ran away and they went on a trip, and on the trip they stayed in an inn. And when they stayed in the inn, the Balas HaBayis was very kind and gracious to them. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachya, he said when they left, this hostess is beautiful. Look what she has done. He said some very beautiful compliments about this woman. So Yeshu said, Rebbe, you don't have a very high standard when it comes to women. She's not exactly a beauty. She's not exactly going to win a beauty pageant. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachya was shocked at two things. Number one, he was shocked that his student focused on her physical beauty to the degree where he spoke about it to him. Number two, he was even more shocked that he thought that his Rebbe, Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachya, would be interested in her physical beauty, and the student's commentary and advice to the Rebbe that, Rebbe, you can do better. You can do better when it comes to women. Okay, so there were two shocking revelations that happened when Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachya made these statements to his Rebbe. So the Rebbe says, you oisvarf, get out of here. And he threw him away. And this Talmud was a real asset. He was had obviously a tremendous, tremendous kirchas hanefesh beyond our wildest imagination. And he had a problem. Listen, in tzadik ba'aretz asher yaseh tov, we all have problems. But the Rebbe threw him away in fury of what he said. And the Talmud was a good Talmud. He was chozer b'shuva. And he came back to the Rebbe and he apologized. I'm sorry, v'chulu v'chulu. And Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachya felt that the crime was so great, he kept on distancing this Talmud. And then came the day. I said, Hashka, everything's b'hashkacha. No one understands how the world works. When the Rebbe decided, today is the day, I'm going to take him back. I want my Talmud back. And that day, the Talmud said to himself, you know what? Let me try one more time. Let me try one more time to be choyzeh b'shev tuta. The Talmud's over here, the Rebbe is over here, and the Rebbe wakes up in the morning and the Rebbe says, today I want my Talmud back. I'm going to take him back. I'm going to embrace him. And the Talmud says, let me try one more time to come back to the Rebbe. And the Talmud, everything is mazel. And the Talmud happens to come to the Rebbe when the Rebbe is in the middle of reciting Kriya Shema. Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. And as he's reciting, the Talmud comes and the Rebbe Taka wants him and the Rebbe motions, one moment, please, one moment, let me finish my recital of Kriya Shema. He picks up his finger, one moment. And the Talmud misunderstood this motion. He thought the Rebbe was saying to him, get lost. And the Talmud, he left, never to return. And the Rebbe, 10 seconds later, finished Shema, bring him in. Where is he? He's gone, never to be seen. And that Talmud said, enough of this Yiddishkeit, and he went and he laid the seeds of Christianity, which has spilled more blood in this world than is fathomable. Okay, and all their name of love and tolerance is all baloney. Look at this actions there. Their actions speak for themselves. Look what they've done. Can you imagine the mazel, the hashkacha? Here they were both, the Talmud did an aveira. No one's blaming anyone here. The Talmud did a terrible aveira. He said words that were not proper. And the Rebbe was correct. He gave him Musar. Like today. Today, everything is sugar-coated. Those days, you give him Musar. He gave him Musar. And the Rebbe didn't want to take him back. And then when the Rebbe Taka, now the time is to take him back. And he knew. Isn't it amazing? The Rebbe knew exactly when to take him back. Mazel. Mazel. Hashkacha Pratis. Yeah. Okay, mazel, the moment, everything was, who could you blame? The Rebbe knew what he was doing, the Talmud did tshuva, the mazel was he came at the wrong moment. 10 seconds later, it would have been a different world today. He arrived 10 seconds too early, and he made a motion which is a natural motion, just wait a moment, and look how it's not to be believed. It's mamish not to be believed how things evolved. And who could you blame? But Chazal say, but Chazal, they do, the truth is, the Chazal do criticize him. The Chazal do say, I made a nice defense for Reb Shimon Prachya. But Chazal not so generous. He Chazal said that the Reb Shimon Prachya did go too far. I take it back, he did go too far. And the terminology they use is, he was doiche b'shtei yodayim. That is the term that is used in the Gemara, b'shtei yodayim. A person should never ever push away a Talmud with shtei yodayim, only one hand.
Whatever it means,
it was too much. So the stira is, the contradiction here is that we have is that over here he's saying never be doicha b'shtei yodayim, and here it says you should be doicha b'shtei yodayim. So how could Rabbi Yudah Chassid ignore an open piece of Gemara? So what is the answer? He doesn't really know the answer. What?
Maybe Bonham and Talmidim.
Talmidim or Bonham
also. It's not. So the answer obviously is that they are not. Is that every situation is unique. The situation by Shimon Prachya was unique. This situation is unique. It requires an enormous amount of chokhmah and siyata deshmaya to know what to do in any given situation. Not basically what he says there, and then you have the Mefarish over there. He says there, basically you can't compare. Every situation is unique. In this matter, you cannot use a story in the Gemara as a support how a person should conduct himself. When it comes to chinuch, it's much more complex. Yes, you had a question.
I would say, unfortunately, these days, the yeshivot are going to push out those students that they cannot pay.
Right, I don't want, we're not here to talk Lashon Hara now. Let's go Vaita. That's Lashon Hara. All right. I told you, we're not here to talk Lashon Hara. Let's go further.
Is there another paragraph? Is there Lashon Hara?
Yeah, it is.
Avshalom had another brother.
Many brothers.
Yeah. Avshalom was Ben Hagit.
Okay.
Adoniah.
Ben Hagit. Ben Hagit.
Built again in the Ephraim because.
Of what happened.
He didn't say anything.
Very good.
So that's what happened. That's exactly.
You see a parallel that Shlomo did not give that the David did not give Musa to Adoniah ben Haggis. Just like he did not give Musa to Avshalom. Older brother, David's chinuch, you find two examples where David failed as a parent. Okay, David failed as a parent twice. He failed with regard to Avshalom, and he failed in regard to Adoniah ben Haggis. He decided, I'm going to be the melech. And the pasuk says very clearly, because the father never made him sad. How do you make someone, a child sad? You give a frask. He never made him give him musar. So David failed with women, and he failed with children. Okay?
Amnon? Amnon, that was...
He raped her. Another story. Okay, Rabbi Sai, please, next. Next, halacha, Rabbi Sai, please. Let's... I believe, I don't remember where it is. I don't remember. It could be. Yeah, I think it's in Sanhedrin. Not all of it is in the Gemara. Some of it is in the Chesronos HaShas. They would take out the Numis Siftas, they put all the Chesronos HaShas back in some of the editions. Hamei Meres Hadask. Okay, now we go to a very unpleasant topic we discussed, but over here I have a lot of information I found that it appeared. And a lot of it relates to, you have to appreciate that it appears that Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid came after Rabbeinu Gershom. So let me give you a little of a hakdama. Rabbeinu Gershom lived in very difficult times. Rabbeinu Gershom was from the earliest Rishonim. He was significantly before Rashi, not all that much. But Rabbeinu Gershom in Jewish history is a major, major topic. Just he himself, who he was, and his time opened up a new era. It was an era of a lot of pogroms, a lot of tzaras in Klal Yisrael, a lot of nisyonos. And it appears nothing is clear, and there are still a lot of questions that are mysteries. Rabbeinu Gershom had a son that went off the derech, converted to Christianity. And this son, it appears, died in his lifetime. So he suffered two tragedies. Number one, the child converted to Christianity, and Rabbeinu Gershom, who was Kodesh Kodoshim beyond our wildest beliefs of who he was as a holy leader and a person, that he has a son that became converted to Christianity, it's a charpa she'ein kamohu. It's not something which is not. See, we don't appreciate in our day and age. We don't look at it like that. But going back almost 1,000, going back 800, 900 years, it was a very, very. The tragedy was infinitely greater. And number two, he suffered a second tragedy, that the child died without doing teshuva. There was always hope. Listen, he converted to Christianity, but you know, he'll be chayzer b'shuva. He'll come back. He'll do teshuva. He didn't do teshuva. He died as a Christian, at least practicing Christianity. We also know as a fact that Rabbeinu Gershom observed for this child 14 days of avelos, not 7, 14 days. Now the question is, what exactly happened? So there are many, many versions, and there are many opinions, and nothing is absolutely clear. But he set a precedent for something that was done. We discussed this yesterday briefly. That was done until recent times, and today is totally not done anymore. And that is this concept of sitting shiva, rachmanu litzlan, for a child who leaves yados. Leaving yados normally means he marries a non-Jew. Okay, it's not called leaving Yadus until Rachmanu Litzlan, the child marries a non-Jew. And it was done in Klal Yisrael for hundreds of years, and Rachmanu Litzlan, such a thing happened. The parents would sit Shiva, instead of there being the Shiva, the child got married, So now the parent would really now, would have really at this point in time in the child's life, would have been celebrating, if he married a nice Jewish girl, would be having the Shiva Asimei HaMishteh, Rachmana Litzlan. Now the parent is observing Avelos, 7 days of Avelos. Now, by the way, it was done until very recent times. And now, by the way, this has halachas, and that is only the parents would sit Shiva, not the siblings. So this Avelos that was practiced for hundreds of years, if Rachman al-Son, such a thing ever happened, was only by the parents, the siblings of this fellow who married a non-Jew would not sit Shiva. Only the parents.
When did it stop?
Recently, in the last 30, 40 years, you've never heard this. In the last 40 years, you've never heard of such a thing.
Why did it stop?
Why? Because we live in a new world today. Okay, whatever it is, you could think about it. I don't have to. Whatever, it's a different world today. Whatever it is, it is what it is. Today, it's not done. Today, you've never heard of it. You've never heard it done, and I cannot imagine any rabbi would advise. What? All right, come on. How could you say that on the yard side of Rav Shragafayel Mendelovich and Rav Cook's yard side? You can't say that. Today you can't say such things. It's not true. It's not true. Totally not true. Not true. You said it's totally false. I'm sorry. Oh, you just said the word halacha. You just said a major word. You said halacha. Who said it's a halacha?
It's not halacha.
Oh, is it? Maybe it is.
No, it's not. Because there were people who...
That's a big machlaikis.
It was a machlaikis.
That's a machlaikis. Now, where Rabbeinu Gershom did, number one, remember, he sat Shiva for 14 days. Number two, his child didn't just become a Christian. His child died also. And he did this. And it's been done throughout the last 100 years only by the parents for 7 days. So there are many, many issues. Obviously, what the Sefer Chassidim is saying, we're about to read, the Sefer Chassidim is drawing from this Maisa with Rabbeinu Gershon. And in looking at the early Mefarshim, okay, I only know what I read over here in the full edition of the Sefer Chassidim, which is all Mefarshim, and he writes there, he presents there many different opinions, all the sources, and some say that Rabbeinu Gershom did not sit Shiva for his child when he converted to Christianity. He did not. He only sat Shiva after he died, which would basically mean that we really do not have a clear source, a makar, for this custom that was observed for hundreds of years, Rachman al-Islam, by people whose child married a non-Jew, because even Rabbeinu Gershom did not sit Shiva for his child when he converted. He only sat Shiva when the child died. So the child died. So the child dies, then of course then he has to sit Shiva because he died. But not necessarily, because we'll see in a few moments, if a child who is not religious dies, the truth is there's no requirement according to halacha to sit Shiva. So why then did he sit Shiva? And why did he sit Shiva 14 days? So the part of the story is, he said that if you sit Shiva for the guf for 7 days, kal v'choymer, you should sit Shiva double for the neshama. So he sat Shiva not for the guf, the body, that he left this world. The fact that he left this world without doing teshuva, he sat Shiva for his neshama. And the neshama, he sat Shiva double for 14 days, kal v'chol, he sits Shiva for the guf for 7 days. Certainly the neshama, which is nitzchi, it needs at least double. Others say no. The reason why he sat Shiva for 14 days is 7 days for the guf and 7 days for the neshama. But that's where he died. Now let's say he didn't die. Now the other versions of the story, that he sat Shiva when he was still alive. And when he was still alive, he sat Shiva immediately for 14 days for the neshama for 14 days. So all of this is all based upon, a lot of this minhag that we have today is all based upon this, what happened to Rabbeinu Gershom himself. The other question is, was Rabbeinu Gershom doing this as a halacha? He felt that this is the nichlal, when Chazal, Rabbeinu Gershom is a Rishon, he can't make up new halacha. Okay, halacha was concluded by the Talmud. Okay, the you want to talk about the Chassimus, the Talmud, the Rabbanon Savaroi, and the Goinim? The Goinim didn't. The Goinim also did not make new halacha. The Goinim, the Talmud was really finished, made the latest by the Rabbanon Savaroi. Maybe not even then. Maybe it was really even the Amoraim. They're the ones who assigned the halacha. Pretty much what the Iker Yisoidus of halacha are. And so Rabbeinu Gershom is not in a position where he can make new halacha. However, he is a guardian of what the halacha is. And the question is, when he sat Shiva for his child, at whatever point he sat, for 14 days, which seems to indicate that he did sit in Shiva for the Neshama, because it's no longer observant, is that a halacha? Or is that what the Chazal used the term, apushe tsa'ara, in order to express, to add pain. It's a very painful thing that happened. And a person, it's therapeutic. A person has a need, even a holy person like Rabbeinu Gershom, to express his tsar by doing something. What? Closure, however you want to talk about it. And this is not something which is unprecedented. You have this in many areas of in today where a person is not obligated according to halacha to observe avelus, but it's done as an expression of apushe tzara. Classic example is a ger. If a ger tzedek loses his biological parents, a mother or a father, it's up to him. If he was close with them and they were good people, he sit shiva. And more often than not, they do sit shiva. A ger, full shiva.
For a guy.
A ger tzedek sits shiva for his parent. A mother or a father that's completely a guy, non-Jewish. The mother is not Jewish, the father is not Jewish, and the ger, they die, and the ger tzedek, he can say kaddish also. He can say kaddish also. What? No, there's no shloshim, no, that there is not. There's no shloshim. If there's a church, that's much more problematic. That's much more problematic. There are many issues, but it's not unheard of. In fact, it's pretty common to hear about a Geret Tzedek is sitting Shiva for a parent. The Shiva doesn't have all of the halachos of Shiva. In fact, it has none of the halachos of Shiva. However, there's no harm done on sitting on a low chair and wearing sneakers and having a meeting in your home and saying Kaddish. And showing respect for the dead. That's Yiskar. Okay, that's Yiskar. Yiskar is a different Indian. Yiskar is a whole different. There's a whole different. Look, there's no Yibes Chodesh. There's no Yibes Chodesh. If a Geret Tzedek loses a parent, can he go to a wedding in 2 weeks? Luchar, yeah. But just to ignore the death of a parent is something which even the ger finds is very disturbing. This is my biological parent. I have to have respect. That's what Judaism teaches me. Brought me into this world. They're a very good person. Now, it's one thing if the parent is not in speaking terms with the child. The parent is a Catholic, a good parent at a church service. All right, those are exceptional circumstances. Obviously, you need a talmid echam to pass what you do there. But more often than not, the guy is not very religious in wherever they came from, and they hang out with their children all the time, and so it's not halacha. It's called apushe tsa'ara, to express tsa'ar. Today you never see this, but when you read the different storybooks, it seems that years ago, son-in-laws or daughter-in-laws that were very close, yes, with their father-in-law, their mother-in-law, or that's for sure, very good, would sit shiva. You don't see it. I saw it once, a son-in-law, I don't know if he actually sat shiva, but he writes kriya. I once saw a son-in-law was very close with his father-in-law and he writes kriya. It's very uncommon today to see such a thing like that. But he did it. He mamash did it. He was really a Tal for Rebbe by the Lubavitch Rebbe. The All Rise Kriya. I was there. I'm eyewitness. I went to the Levaya. I saw the Chastidim. They Rise Kriya.
Even this boy in the family.
Yeah, they were children. They are sons. In addition, I saw this family. I'm referring to the sons.
Did they count themselves together?
No, he did he say Kaddish? I don't know. That, I don't know. I saw him rise Kriya. That I know for sure. I saw my own eyes he rise Kriya.
According to Rabbi Akiva, Kabed etavicha ve'etimecha etavicha et, it means father-in-law.
Who does it say that?
Rabbi Akiva, et.
Where does it say that? I never heard this. I never heard this. Okay. 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 If you have a fine. Okay.
So, et lerabot
achicha gadol. Achicha hagadol. Okay, Rabbi Sai, a stepson. That is very common. Rabbi said that is very. Rabbi said a stepson that is very, very common, almost probably 100%. A stepson sits shiva for a stepfather. Is it a halachic shiva? No, it's not. It's not a halachic shiva, but all the rules apply anyway. They probably don't go to a wedding for a whole year. I don't know the details, but I would imagine they go to town. They go to town. It's not halacha, but it's apushe tzara. So here it's the same exact thing. This is a dilemma. This is a dilemma in the commentators, in the full edition of the Sefer Chasidim, he presents the different opinions, and the little letters, the bigger letters, the bigger letters, all the various opinions. There's a very big dilemma. Is this called halacha or is it called apushe tsa'ara? And everything comes back. All roads lead to one source, and that is Rabbeinu Gershoy Me'or HaGoyla, the undisputed Gadol Hadar and leader of Klal Yisrael, and from the earliest Rishonim. This tragedy that happened in his life, there's no doubt about it, that the facts are there's a child that converted, and also he died in the lifetime of Rabbeinu Gershom, and it's undisputed that Rabbeinu Gershom observed 14 days. The only things that are a little bit not clear are when he observed the 14 days, after he died or before he died, and why 14 days and not 7 days. Was it 7 days for the guf, 7 days for the neshama, or was it 14 days just for the neshama? And with that, Hadamah... Yes, correct, yes. He's the one who made the cherim. Yes, correct. Rabbeinu Gershom was the one who made the cherim. If you read someone else's mail, there's a cherim. And if you married more than one woman, more than two wives, there's a cherim Rabbeinu Gershom not to marry polygamy, more than one wife, and not to read someone else's mail. And there are other things as well. There are other things as well. You know the story, the two go together. Is where there was a Rebbe said to a Talmud, I have bad news to tell you. Someone was in Kohl learning with my wife. He used to read the mail. The Rosh Hashiva would intercept the mail to filter the mail to make sure he knew what his Talmidim were reading. So the Rosh Hashiva read the mail, and bad news came in the mail that this fellow's wife died. So he told it, and the Talmud already knew. He knew from other sources what happened already. So the Rebbe said to him, I have bad news to tell you that your wife passed away. So he said back to him, which one? Which one? So the Rebbe said, what do you mean, which one? Cheir Rabbeinu Gershom. You married to more than one woman? So he said back to him, and to read someone's mail is not Cheir Rabbeinu Gershom. They're both Cheir Rabbeinu Gershom.
In America, also it's forbidden to buy.
What?
In America, also you cannot.
In America?
Yeah.
In America, it's forbidden to marry more than one wife?
Yeah. No,
polygamy?
Not too much.
But let's say you get a rabbinic exception. The Mormons. Well, who's the candidate for president?
America cannot get too many.
Polygamy, you're not allowed to, okay, but they have ways of getting around it. There are people in America that have more than one wife. There are ways around. Rabbi Yisrael, let's read it inside. Okay, Hamemir Rachmana Litzlan. Now Hamemir Zadas Meis Ein Baichin Olav. Here discuss a person who leaves the fold and he dies. Ein Baichin Olav, Ein Maspidin Olav, and there's no crying and there is no eulogies. There's no laws of Avelos. It's a pasuk. It's a pasuk al tifku lemeis. It says in Yirmiyah, do not cry lemeis, but instead b'chu v'chol laholech, cry for the person who goes off the derech. Okay, here in this context, we're darshening it, the way it's explained, let's read a few more words. Mitoras laholech, and he adds in, Mitoras Hashem lechamir dosoi, a person who goes away from the laws of Hashem to exchange his religion, be'od shehu chai, cry for him. In other words, he interprets this in pray for him, Shema Yoshuv, maybe he'll do teshuvah. Because if he dies without doing teshuvah, it's too late. Ki lo Yoshuv oid, he will not do teshuvah kishemes once he dies. And v'imshav umes, let's say indeed before he dies for a few moments, he's chayzeh b'shuv, and then he dies, then boichin alaf. Okay, so then now he elaborates a little bit more. So you have to read the whole thing together and probably go backwards because it's again the words are a little bit cryptic. But indeed, when he does go at the moment of time, Rachmana Litzlan, when this person leaves the fold, that's the time you should cry for him. In other words, he's saying that's the time you should sit in that shiva, avelus. Ukashahimir, then ro'oi livkais ma. Why? Because ma kish never haguf boichin the kal v'choimer. Everything he's saying over here, he's alluding to. You don't have the mefarshim. You really don't have a clue what he's talking about. Everything over here is alluding to Rabbeinu Gershon, because he's the one who made this kal v'choimer for 14 days. Ma kish never haguf boichin kish never haguf haneshama loy kol shekain. How much more so should a person cry for persons whose both neshama and guf is gone? Dover acher ki lo yoshuv oid nemer al hamachtin. Then he has another interpretation on this pasuk. Is referring to who will not have an opportunity in the next world to do teshuva? Only a person who is choyte umachti asarabim. Take a stop for one moment. Let's explain. According to his first interpretation, it's a very frightening interpretation. He's saying that a person who leaves this world in a state of Avera, he does don Averos, he's not observant in Torah mitzvahs, and he leaves this world, he will not have an opportunity in the next world to do teshuvah. His soul is finished. That's very frightening. In the Sefer Chassidim's second interpretation, he implies that's not true. Even a person who abandons Yiddishkeit and dies in a matzav of being a bal avera, not observant in Torah mitzvos, in the next world, he'll be able to gain entry. He'll be able to fix himself, do teshuva, and have some type of restoration or rectification of his neshama. Oh, but the pasuk says ki lo yoshuv od. No, you're making a mistake. The pasuk is only referring to a person who not only has abandoned Yiddishkeit, he has influenced other people to abandon Yiddishkeit. If he is a choyte umachti, he causes other people to abandon Yiddishkeit, he will not be given an opportunity in the next world to do teshuva. But if a person himself, Rachman al-Nistan, is not observant, by choice, we're not talking about attending Shanishpa. That we're not. We're talking over here. We're talking about people who know exactly what they're doing. And you can argue that today there's no such person. That's been a very big argument, because today no one really appreciates Yiddishkeit enough to say that he is lahachis abandoning Yiddishkeit. But we're going back 800 years ago, where people knew what Yiddishkeit was all about, and they made a very deliberate decision to abandon Yiddishkeit, Rachmana Litzlan. So these people, he has a dilemma here, two perushim in the pasuk. Will these people have an opportunity in the next world to do teshuva? And that's Davracher ki lo yoshev oid nemer al hamachtiin lefi shelo yoshev oid she'ein maspikim biyado la'asayis teshuva. They denied that opportunity. But let's go back to the pasuk. Wind that back with the pasuk. Go back to the few lines above and read the pasuk one more time. The pasuk says, Al tifku lemes, do not cry for the dead, because the dead, they're in a good place. But if you want to cry, b'chu v'choy lahoylech, you should cry for people in this world who have decided to leave, who have decided to go off the derech. That's pretty much what this interpretation comes down to, and that is giving us an indication that a person, Rachman al-Hassan, people should sit shiva if their child, let's say, marries a non-Jew, which indeed was what Rabbeinu Gershom, the Rosh HaGoyle, did when his son left the fold. As we explained, with the Kal V'Chomer, for the guf, a person is misabel, how much more so does one misabel for the neshama? All right, we'll take a short break.